Entrevista com Peter Matusek, dia 28 de junho de 2008.
So, what's your background and what have you been working on lately?
Well, my background is originally cultural sciences. I was teaching at the Humboldt University in Berlin for several years. The Institute of Cultural Sciences is not an English word, cultural analysis or something like that. And there I got very much involved in experimenting with media aesthetics. The questions which arise around this field of research are how do we perceive our environment, how do we perceive life situations, and with situations spaces that are experienced by subjects. We do not live in spaces, or we do not live even in environments, we live in situations, and situations are made as well by subjects and also by the subjective experiences of our senses. Yeah, view, I hear, I see, I taste, I touch. Yeah, this is very important to regard as a part of environments. And of course, an environment is something that gives me objects and processes to detect and to perceive. Situations are also made by atmospheres. Atmosphere is a notion that we can hardly grasp in objective terms. Atmospheres are performative objects. Atmospheres register when we enter a room, for example, and we feel, oh, it's very sticky and it's a tight atmosphere, or it's a gay atmosphere. Atmospheres we have a very good sense for, but it's very difficult to grab it in terms of theoretical concepts. So that is something we must experience and experiment with in the field of media aesthetics. How is the appearance of media? And I would suggest to media more than is usually done. Media are also our sense apparatus. We create spaces, we create objects, we create sense experiences already by mental constructive activities. So all this is all our experiences, all our perceptions are mediated in a way. Mm-hmm. Technology is just a means to enforce these processes, and we are still wondering what exactly happens when we use these means of technical media to enforce our sense apparatus. But in the field of media aesthetics, we can make experiments that reflect not only on our surroundings, but also on how it feels like, how we subjectively experience things. So that's my field of research, and I go on with it since next semester, October 2008, at the University of Siegen, which is famous for media studies. And there I take a professorship on media aesthetics.
It's in Germany.
in Germany?
It's in Germany. It's near Cologne, 100 kilometers from Cologne. They have good equipment there, good people and good equipment. We also have ICON in media informatics. We can create pieces of artwork and create simulation and experiments and things like that over there.
They have also own exhibition space?
They have, they're mainly interested in research, but they have also exhibition spaces, and they have a big research program, which is called, in German, the word is Medienumbrüche, revolutions or changes in media history. Mm-hmm. That's the field of interest. And there's quite a lot of practical projects also that are running there. One contribution I make to this field of research is a project that I started in Berlin already, and it's concerned with memory theaters. Memory theaters were invented in the 16th century originally, and was the first attempt, so to say, to create spaces that give impulse on the subject to create his own memory in regards to the memory objects, which were allegoric kind, microcosm, microcosm, and sort of contemplative space that was really meant as being a built space, an architectural space, to produce imaginations, to produce fantasies that are, as we know, very much today, are very much connected with our brain structures. So we never remember the past. We create the past, and we create our past. We create autobiographical experiences. Now and then, every year. And so this is also one field of research which is interesting for me, because today we can, since about 10 or 15 years, in computer art, many attempts to rebuild memory theaters. There are others, and I'm interested why this old field of creating a space for why this is coming again to us. Yeah, I think we are living in a performative culture, not anymore in a representative culture. And to live in a performative culture means we have no need where we can identify who am I, who is, what is around me. I think interactions, and we try to understand what the process of change happens when we interact with others.
Maybe you have already touched all the questions somehow, but we can...
Just repeat, you know, I try to give you some material, yeah. And I hope you yeah. are a good cutter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interrupt me.
Yeah. We can talk about it, because you said a lot of different possibilities that you are working on, and... I would like to know who and what are your main references to discuss all these topics you are interested in. I mean references.
Preferences.
References.
References. References.
Reference. Aesthetic.
Ah, I see.
What
I see,
is
I
your...
See. Yeah.
And the main concepts also.
Okay. That's interesting. For me, like, for many others that were originally educated in literature sciences, the questioning about media with consequent progress in this field of questioning. Think of Walter Benjamin, think of Marshall McLuhan, and Friedrich Kittler, and many others, all were originally experts on literature. And they came to a point where we discovered what is literature. It's not just letters printed in books, but it's media embedded in a mix of other media with migrations between the different media. Literature is also image, of course. Literature is sound, of course. So it was sort of revolutionary for the field of literature sciences. And I think it was pushed forward by the computer revolution. At the time, we started reflecting on what changes are happening with digital media. All cultural sciences had to start through a process of modernization and of opening their borders. So I come also from literature sciences. I've worked, so to say, traditionally on Goethe's natural sciences. And I came to cultural science when I was in Berlin, and my references, this is, so far it's difficult to say, because cultural science is a space, an open space for very different disciplines to question phenomena in terms of cultural science. It means you go through many disciplines. For example, one main topic I'm working on is memory and remembrance. And if you want to get in touch with this phenomenon, we have to go through neurosciences, psychology, communication theory, of course literature, science, art history, and so on. So it's exactly the mix, the combination of different aspects of scientific questioning that is interesting for me. And it's not just mixing it all together, it's not serving science in the way that we use all their means, but it's trying to find out more about phenomena which are broken or cut when we reduce the focus on just one scientific expertise. So we are interested in phenomena, we are interested in space, in situations, and so on. And we have to put all we can together to come closer. to phenomena. And for me, it's worse to take a reference to media aesthetics, because in media aesthetics we have a good starting point for questioning how do I hear, how do I remember, what processes are happening when I question about this. And media aesthetics is not so much about asking what is a medium, it's a questioning about what is, in an anthropological sense, I and you. My English is careful, you have to cut this off. Was ist der Mensch? Immanuel Kant, the philosopher, who is man? I don't know if this is a correct translation. It's not gender correct. But maybe you know what I mean.
Was ist das Menschen?
Das Mensch, der Mensch, ja. Was ist der Mensch? Human, what is human? Yeah, that's the best.
Human beings.
What is human being?
Deep question.
Yeah, that's why I'm interested in it.
So, somehow you have already answered the second question, that was about the relations between your work and other fields of knowledge. How these relations take shape. In your opinion, what are the most significant changes in the creative process after digital era?
After
digital era.
Digital era. Mm-hmm.
Chance.
Most significant changes.
In the process.
When we start to question about what is new, about new media, and what it makes with us, we can discover that there is much old in the new. Many things that people describe as a change, we can find when we are historically looking backwards, have in a way been there before.
Would you say that it's universal? Something universal?
In a way it's universal. You know, if you look in the books for media sciences, you find a lot of Plato, philosopher Plato.
Plato.
Yeah, and almost everyone is quoting the dialogue which is called Phaedrus, where Socrates tells a story about the invention of letters, the invention of writing.
Oh, okay.
And the story goes like this. He says that the king, the Egyptian king, who is brought to the invention of writing, he says, well, you say, you inventor, you say it's to improve our memory, but I tell you it's not improving our memory because we are not active anymore on our own memory. We rely upon what we have written, and so we delegate responsibility for what we have written, because we are not anymore in the actual process of speaking, like in oral culture, and using our life experience to create our own memories. So this is just an example for the discovery of something that we describe as new and new technology. We depend on all these digital equipment, and we are losing control about all this, which we find already described in Plato's writings. So what is really new? Not so easy to say. But of course, we all know and we all experience that digital media make big changes in our lives. One big change is concerned with, of course, our experience of spaces. Yeah, we transcend boundaries that before were there and limiting our field of experiences. Today everyone says, I go into the internet, I go in my chat community, I go into that forum. So many private, half public and public spaces are created by digital media. That's what Martin McLuhan called the global village, of course. And what we do not yet understand is what it means to live in more places. Of course, there are all these phenomena like informational overload. There is this phenomenon of speed. Yeah, life is getting more speedy. We have to be at many different places in the same time. And of course, it creates sometimes it creates problems. Sometimes we enjoy to be at different places at the same time. We just have to look at our very close field of experience in our lifestyle. When I was young, I was hitchhiking through Europe and other countries, and one needed a map and look around where is a place to stay. Today, in the morning, you put on your mobile phone and a browser, and you look for a place to stay with photographs, and you make a booking, and then you switch on your navigation system, and it brings you there. We do not think anymore about it. It's just going that way. So space is, of course, space is revolutionized. Our experience of space is revolutionized, and I personally, I'm very interested in what changes are happening in our sense for situations. Another thing is control. Of course, it has to do with space. We cannot control anymore processes we are involved in and places we are living at the same time. So what we used to call the public sphere is not anymore a sphere. It's a mass of bubbles. Actually, when you put soap into water and what happens when you put it, it's not one sphere, it's many spheres. And they're not so easily connected. They can reach everyone in the world almost, yeah, whom I want to communicate with. But the way we get in touch with other places and other people are not transparent for us. It's like a jungle. So the public sphere is coming to an end. This would mean that unification, many people say, oh, internet makes everyone same. I think the opposite. There's no unification, there's a partification, there's a segmentation of interest groups, of lifestyles, of mentalities that are even more difficult to be brought together. Yeah, we see how much political the field of politics has problems with keeping things together. Yeah, because communications have their own rules and they go their own ways. The first symbol of a public space was the agora in Greece, the marketplace. People came together, different people, and they communicated very directly with each one another. Today, I don't leave home when I elect a new government when I'm online. Today, I don't leave home when I meet my interest group also. So there's the processes of alienation. I would think people are not so much brought together. And maybe it's an interesting problem for artists to use these different fields of segmentated communication to create again a second public sphere, yeah? To invent new public spheres. That's a challenge. Mm-hmm. That's a challenge, and also I think for the field of architecture and design, how can we in virtual spaces? How can we design virtual spaces where we meet people again, where exchange, real exchange across boundaries of culture and mentalities can happen. It doesn't happen just by this. It doesn't happen just by entering a keyword in Google.
Yeah.
We have to create poems. So far we have just the name, the label for it. Second Life was an experiment like this. We can't draw some conclusions of it. But that's not just rebuilding the world we seem to know. It's not the solution for public spaces in how we design public spaces in digital media.
Yeah. While we were talking, I was thinking an extra question about the new. Why the new is so important in our civilization?
Well, that's a very good question. I think civilization is putting preference to the new. As long as we are satisfied with our rural environment, there's a field, we can grow the plants and eat from it, and the sun is going up and down, and we are just content with this circle of life. This is not civilization. Civilization starts with thinking, oh, the guy next field has more or better crops. I want to I want more. I want another house. I want another lifestyle. And so there's I think unsatisfactoriness is the starting point of civilization. And that has to do with the new. We are not satisfied with what there is, and we probably have one of our main civilization diseases is not being able to to be satisfied with what is. So we look for a change, because we cannot easily stand where we are. If we don't like where we are, we want to go somewhere else. But on the other side, to rediscover our ability to get a new balance between our expectations and our reality, we need the notion of the new to rediscover what we could have, or maybe what we have already. Yeah. In the field of aesthetics, the notion of the new is very important, because we get very easily used to environments. People who live near big highways, where it's noisy, they tell you after 2 weeks, oh, it's okay, I don't hear it anymore. And also in technological environments, also in environments that are not really good for people, we get used to it. So we lose our ability to be unsatisfied, to feel what if there's a lack of humanity, if there's a lack of intense sensual experience. And of course, aesthetics can bring us sensual experience in a form that we discover as new. It means we rediscover. Olafsson is this big sun he made in the Tate Gallery in London. Yeah, ooh, this is light. Experiences like this are the ones where I would say civilization needs the new to overcome habituation. Everything we do is everything that we have made a habit. Is this yours? Okay, yeah, it's much maybe some. Everything we go, get habited in brings the danger of losing our sensibility. We need to bring always our sensibility anew. And because we have so many new environments with digital technology, with all things that have to do, depend on that, media aesthetics has to bring us new values for seeing the new, so we can behave in a sensitive way to our environment. Please cut out. My English is not perfect, so
yeah. How do you see the relations between the current production of electronic art and the available technology concerning this aim of bringing sensitivity to the experience?
I think for the question, what is new on new technology?
That's I also was interested when I created this question about is it possible to creativity is in front of technology, or technology somehow guides what's going to be produced?
So Well, I would say traditional technology and digital technology, they differ in respect to our immediate senses. Yeah, and manufacture production and in industrial production, we touch and feel and grab what we produce. In new technology, we produce things in that are not to be grabbed and to be tasted and to be felt as a bodily border. We just grab through a virtual in environment. There's something, a house or something, we just go through the walls and things like this. And this may be a symbol for other fields where a technology has changed. Yeah? The contact between our bodily experience and that which is produced or projected has become disconnected. Yeah? It's not so easy to be reconnected to our bodily experience what we produce today. So this is one main difference, one could say, and there is chances in it. People have always dreamt to lose their bodily boundaries, like the old shamanist cultures. They got into trance and they're leaving the body to fly over the spheres to visit spirits and so on. So this is again something old in the new, which we now try to rebuild with means of new technology. But on the other hand, it's very much different when we for example, when you go into trance and have an out-of-body experience, we have an out-of-body experience. When we just put our visual experience into a virtual environment scenario, our body is somewhere projected in this scenario, but we have not yet an out-of-body experience. Yeah, it takes a lot to create virtual reality environments that come closer to out-of-body experience. They have to rely on the user, on the subject that is involved. This is commonly forgotten in many installations and talks about virtual reality. Yeah, who is the one who feels the one who is the one who feels his presence in an environment? It's not just the environment that can give the answer, but it's the contact between installation and the a person who is a receptor, and that creates situations. We have to look for situations and atmospheres in which we behave, and to realize that with virtual reality equipment is a very difficult task. It's a very difficult task. Virtual reality equipment has to be reversed in a sense, to become what I like to say, to call real virtuality, yeah? To make a real experience of virtuality. And virtuality is always to open the sense for which is possible, not just which what I can see and construct on screens, but what is opening my perception for what is not seen and beyond, also beyond virtual reality projections. But there are pieces of art, Jeffrey Shaw and Agnes Hebetus and others. I like also works of Monika Fleischmann and Wolfgang Strauss. I think they have good questions. The experiment with the contact between people and the perception of media that comes in another way to the receptor.
And how do you see the user's role in the interactive? We have some appeal to participation since the 60s also, as well as going to public space, but now it's different, the impulse of this appeal.
First of all, we have to make clear, and I would say it is not clear yet, what is interactivity. In the performative arts, 60s, there were many experiments with interactive installations in a way that there was a performance going, and the public was not anymore the public. It was brought into situations where it would interact with the performer or the performance process. But this form of interactivity needed, paradoxically, the notion of public to come to its point. Only when I'm feeling the ambivalence of being outside of the piece of art or the performance, and at the same time inside, when I'm on the threshold. That's the interesting part of interactivity. Just to grab a sculpture or image on the wall, that's easy. Yeah, in this sense, we would always have been interactive in relation to our environments. Interactivity, in an emphatic sense, has to look for the threshold. Has to build a threshold between being inside and outside. Now, what does it mean? When we look at electronic arts and interactive media, many times people say when we click on a hypertext link, it's interactive. I don't know if you have heard about this polemic of Manfred Faller and Slavoj Žižek. They talk about interpassivity. Have you heard about that?
No.
Can show you a book, Interpassivity. And the main example for interpassivity is I have no time to watch TV, so I program my equipment to say 9 o'clock, please record this TV show for me. And because we can program our equipment in this way, we record so many TV shows that we cannot watch them. So the passivity means our equipment watches it for us. Yeah, we program a search agent in the internet to collect everything which meets our requirements, keyword or so. And our mailboxes are full and more full of all these results of search. So we have no time, we just cannot look at all this information. So we have delegated our activity to our equipment. And this is one thing we should make clear when we talk about interactivity. As long as it is just like clicking on buttons, it has nothing to do with interactivity, it's the opposite. Yeah. When I read a book or look at an image in a museum, there's interactivity because I'm on the threshold. Yeah. I not only see the image is seeing me, and we start a dialogue. And this is a mental dialogue. It's not, I do not touch the Mona Lisa. I do not want to go to, into prison, and I do not have to touch the Mona Lisa. The dialogue and the interactivity and the object with me is taking place. So, of course, there can be interactivity in interactive media. But again, I would say only a small portion of this will be really the real interactivity. The main part will be interpassivity. So what is interactivity in digital media? It's not just clicking on links and buttons, but creating thresholds on the surface of an electronic device, screen or so, and starting play with the user, where he has to make decisions between narrative of this fragmentation will be an interesting one. And this again is a challenge for artists, making hyperfiction, the narratives, and so to keep the balance between the antagonists of narrative and interactivity. Interactivity in the interpassive sense. Yeah. Only when narrative is recepted by the subject and produced as in the imagination of the subject, then equipment for making choices or changing places can be composed in a way that they support this imaginative process and not just cut it off.
Yeah. Do you use not to use, but do you take Umberto Eco as reference to discuss this inside-outside critical distance, or
do you... Umberto Eco, what would you think of his semiotics, or what do you mean when you refer to Umberto Eco?
There's a book, I don't know in German the name, but it's
six, in English?
Maybe of, in Italian it's Sette Pagate, the six walks through the forest of fiction. I don't know it.
Unfortunately, I do not know it.
Oh, okay. Just I was wondering some connections between what you said with this.
I could make maybe a little more clear when I refer to Borges, the Argentine writer Borges, and he has written a story which is called The Garden of Walking Paths. And in this story he describes a Chinese encyclopedic work in which you can find stories, and these stories are forking in time. So for example, a person enters a room, is entering a room, and there he meets someone else, and he could decide to kill this person, he could decide to talk with this person, he could decide to leave the room, and all these storylines, Borges says, are content of this book. This is often taken as a fictive predecessor of hypertext, of hyperfiction. But when we look at hyperfiction, this does not really happen. And this is a very, very complicated point about narrative. We can imagine such a story, but I do not know anyone who has really achieved to realize this story. This gives something to think about. And I think the main misunderstanding and the main hindrance of creating such a realization is that we do not distinguish clear enough between media in a technological sense on the one hand side, and concepts, mental concepts, on the other hand side. Narrative is a mental concept, and we can create a narration. But when we take hypertext as a story space, the media aspect and the conceptual aspect are mixed together. Yeah, hypertext, in first place, is just a technology. It's a structure, a data structure. Yeah, but when we talk about narrative, it's a concept in our mind, and that's not the same. So when we really try to use hypermedia data structures to make mental concepts of narration arise in our minds, we have to invent very, very complicated contents to make this real. It's not just done by just putting data in these forking structures. Can you follow?
Yeah, I think so.
About? For me, it's a bit difficult to talk about it in English, but I can, if you go on my website, There's a few English articles.
Yeah,
also on intertextuality and hypertext and so on. So maybe you find some quotable things over there.
I
mix your concept, huh? I'm sorry.
No. It's really interesting.
Afterwards, you have to cut through all this rubbish and find your way. You know, I just develop thoughts.
Maybe.
We're talking.
Do you have something else to say, the connections between space and narrative in the current production of art, electronic art? Concerning these aspects you had talked about, if you can pick up some examples to discuss, would be interesting.
Probably you are interested in good examples.
Yeah,
and that makes me think about it.
Yeah,
it's difficult for me.
You do not need to answer right now. We can keep on it if you remember. You said it.
Let me think for a while. I make an attempt. It's quite an old installation. Maybe you know this one, Jeffrey Shaw. What is it called? Legible City. Do you know that one?
Mm-hmm.
What I find interesting about it is. First place, he is working with text as architecture. And I think it's quite important to realize that when we talk about hypertext technology, we are not talking anymore about text, like text in books. Hypertexts are and type of media are clickable objects, and the process of reading is undermined by this form of presentation. Why is it undermined? Because usually when we read a text in a book, we are not gazing at the letters. We are not gazing at the form of the layout. We read, that means we forget about vision and we envision in our mind. This is not anymore possible in digital presentation of media like text, because we have to look at their form and their layout, because they are loaded with functions. We have to take them as means of interactivity in a technological sense. So what Jeffrey Shaw does in Legible City, I think, is very consequent. He does not present texts like texts in a book, but he presents texts as architecture. Interactivity is not realized by clicks, but by the bike that enacts a simulation of driving through an architecture. And what we see is a new form of reading. While driving through these architectures, we read them. We read architectures. When we drive with a car through landscape, we also read this landscape. And to transfer this model on the process of reading in the circumstances of digital media, I think gives us something to reflect on, and something to feel anew how we relate in a new way to text which is presented on computer screens and the internet and so on. Maybe this could be an example.
Do you see relations between artwork process structure and the social system we live in? Does artwork
this is not my artwork.
It's not your
artwork. Artwork process structure. Artwork process. What do you mean by artwork process structure? The processes that are produced by our artwork, or the processes that produce artwork?
Sorry, repeat.
What do you mean by artwork process structure? Is it the process in which artwork is the structure in which artwork is produced process?
Or
is it the process in which artwork is produced? Artwork produces structures,
yes.
Or there are structures in which artwork is produced?
You can say in both. And also, if you want to connect to the other and almost last question concerning the spaces of where this art, this kind of art has been produced, researched and exhibited, if you make some connections to this.
I don't think I get the point. Maybe you just could you give some examples or some keywords?
When I ask about the artwork processes to come back to the art, if I'm going to analyze, for example, a work of Jeffrey Shaw. I would not say about the object itself. I would say about his process in doing that. And if how this process of doing that is related to the social system we live in. Did you get it?
I see. Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you do not say, you do not need to say about this work itself, but in general. And also connecting to the idea of performative artworks, that's not the aim, is not to, I don't know. Also it's difficult for me in English to talk about this.
But I maybe come closer, just think about what one could say about it. You know, when I was in Berlin, I was involved in a research program that is called Performative Turns in Cultural History. And by performative turns, we mean that cultures of representation, which are rather static, with a clear distinction between subject and object, like Louis XIV in France, a very representative culture. Everything is architectonically on its place. Even the gardens look like the interior of rooms. And on the other hand, the affirmative turn happens when this order of representation is changed, is disrupted, is put into movement, is challenged. And yeah, the extreme is a world which is seen as a stream of consciousness. Nothing is what it is, nothing can be identified. Everything is made translucent, like the impressionist paintings, yeah, that reacted to temporalization of culture, yeah, modern industry and speed and so on, and discoveries on the way we perceive things, discovering namely that things are not things, but rather are constructions of our minds. So we have these both poles that are always in an antagonist relation to each other. Today I would say we are very close to the performative pole. Things are moving. Neurosciences explain us that there is no I in our brain to be located. It's just that performative process is a theater. Yeah. Our perceptions, our thoughts are performed by a multitude of networking neurons that are never stable, always active. And then digital media, in a way, of course, they are like this network of neurons. Yeah, data find their way through this network. They do not go from A to B. Yeah, well, they are received on B, but what happens between A and B is a dump. For us, at least. Speed and the multitude of timings we have to receive. We are in different spaces, so we are living also in different times, in different speeds. All these are indicators of a performative culture, I would say. And there's nothing to be evaluated upon it. We have just to regard that when things are out of balance, we have to look toward the other pole. We have to look in a performative time. We have to look what gives us a sense of place, a sense of where I am, a sense of how can I hold for a second, yeah. Because we need both. We need change and we need places to stay. And we know what happens that we are living dads in very representative cultures, very structured, very hierarchic, or we are maniacs driven by the distractions that new media give us. Always, everywhere, and at the same time, nowhere. So that we can feel when we are very much involved in modern lifestyles, of course. That's a very
interesting answer. Yeah, it's a very interesting approach to what I need, I think. just now concerning the space of research, production and exhibition, could you say something about this places concerning, since the structure they have, like, which kind of place, to the sponsorship aspects.
Sponsorship?
Yes. I'm interested in know if here, for example, if you have ZKM in Karlsruhe, that is, it's sponsored by state, it's, you have some... I'm interested in know if the multiple possibilities to this kind of production nowadays, like there is also some production sponsored by companies, and it's another another kind of creativity going on. And
Okay, maybe I can connect these two, but I could go on from a theoretical explanation about performative cultures to exhibition places, because we find this, what I call antagonism between the representative pole and the performative pole, always involved in exhibition concepts. Both have to be there. Today, we live in a performative culture, so every museum, almost every museum, they try to give us sort of adventure park, theme park or so. Everything is moving and everything can be touched, and kids are happy to play around, and also the grown-ups are invited to go on a how is it called, jungle camp tour or something through the exhibition objects. This tends to a loss of awareness. Awareness needs some time to arise. The neural researcher Hans Pöppel has made experiments and found out that we need about 3 seconds to experience a situation as present. Things that are less under the mark of 3 seconds are fragmented, are not really experiences, they're just fragments of perceptions. On the other hand, if we are too slow, if you just have to wait until the mass, or the mass in the church is over, just standing there, we lose attention, because we are not involved enough in change. So both has to be there, also in museums. And in digital arts, objects mostly are very much in movement, tend to be a performative exhibition objects. So what I see quite well realized in Karlsruhe is that there's a good balance between digital objects that are in action and spaces where we can contemplate on them. We know from psychology that human awareness is never in multitasking mode. Humans cannot do multitasking. By the way, computers also cannot do multitasking, because a processor has always to decide which program to perform. Whereas it seems that if the processes are performed at the same time, technically the computer decides, now this program, then this program, and it seems as if they happen at the same time. If we are confronted with different attentional objects, like is common in digital arts and media arts today, like text, sound, image, and so on, we, without knowledge, we always decide if we perceive sound or image or text. They can go together, so it feels quite good, or they can be separated, and we feel, oh, it takes effort to follow. But what really happens is, we never really can be fully aware of different sense phenomena at the same time. The experiments which are really interesting about inattentional blindness, that means people can be shown movies, and they have a task to count people or contacts between people, and they do not see that crazy things happen in these movies. They just do not see it. And afterwards they show them, and they just say, it's impossible. Yeah. In a flight simulator, for example, experiment, the pilot in this simulator was asked to land on the airport, and he just didn't see that in the simulation another airplane was right in the way of his landing pass. He just didn't see, because he's a pilot. Usually there is no plane on this on the spot. So we are so tunneled in our awareness, and we have to be tunneled when we try to focus and to be concentrate, that we do not perceive many things while we perceive one thing. And we can train a little, but we are humans, and we are genetically developed in 10,000s of years. And with this window of 3 seconds, or this necessity of being focused on one thing at a time, we cannot change that much. So this is also to be regarded in the concept of exhibition spaces. And because you were asking about sponsorship, private sponsor with economical interest will always tend to give you this adventure park thing. Because what's also true about us, we are hunters, and we are very much used to, if anything is moving, we react to it. So if I want just to get the person into my bank or whatever, I give him objects that move, and he just cannot behave differently, like going towards the source of movement. And this is a duty of public sponsorship to create spaces that are not so easily attractive. Yeah? Where maybe people do not go like they go into Hollywood cinemas. When they come out, they are very happy, but to get them in, it's not so easy. Probably pieces of art that take your mental activity, which is the only piece of art that is worth building, are not so consumer friendly. And I think the public sphere has a duty to create exhibition places that are not so consumer friendly in the sense that they are just places where you can consume art instead of contemplate on art.
I promise this is the last one. But this is an extra question. If you were going, how do you see the formation in this field, educational aspects and formation? And if you were going to create a course in this field today, what would you rewrite?
Formation?
Educational aspects, like. The,
if you're education.
Yeah.
Are you asking before the background of digital media, or what is the background of this question? I could talk about my educational ideas, of course, but
this question is a kind of extra question because. It's a suggestion from the professors that guides my course, my research group that I belong. So some years ago they were in a kind of the same, the same thing I'm doing right now, making interviews with a lot of people in this field of media and some media in architecture, media in art, media in many other things. And they asked me to put this question more to make some comparisons what some years ago people would priorize in this field and what people would priorize right now. you know?
As education.
Yeah, educational aspects. Mm.
Mm. Well, maybe it's even has to be responded for the background of changes in media technology, because we are very much involved today in so-called e-learning.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
E-learning programs. I also create e-learning devices, but with e-learning I don't mean so-called interactive courses where you can sit at home and like click 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 and you have learned your stuff. This is an entirely wrong concept of education, I would think. Education means contact between people in a learning group. Also the teacher is a learner. The teacher is not a learner and instead thinks he is only a giver of information. He is in the wrong job. So what we have to create are situations in which the whole learning group goes on a discovery journey. And this is, in the first place, it's a social process. People meet people. And also when we make science, the core of science is to ask what is human and to humanize. Science who has not this goal is not science, it should be worth regarded. So, nothing can replace contact and dialogue between people in a learning group. No tele-teaching or interactive e-learning course. What I am talking about when I talk about e-learning is blended learning. That means there's a merging of new media in a situation, or merging with a situation where people are coming together and exchange and are on this discovery journey. So how can I precise this? One thing that happens is which you cannot transform on digital media, because you were also asking about creative processes. How does inspiration arise? Inspiration comes from frustration. Inspiration comes from questioning, and it's very hard to teach people how to question, how to come into question. Yeah. Hallo, jetzt zwei. Wir sehen uns nachher unten, oder? Ihr seid nicht dabei? Ja, also... Alles klar. Alles, ich vertrete euch.
Sehr gut.
Ich bin auch noch... Ich quatsche so ein bisschen, weil ich gerade ein Interview gebe. Nicht, dass ihr euch wundert, hat der Typ irgendwie einen Schatten, der monologisiert vor sich hin. Ja, nicht wundern. Also, okay. Gut, gut, sehr gut. I'm sorry. Was denn? Ja, da hat einer insgesamt, glaube ich, 12 Autos systematisch die Rückspiegel abgepickt. Ja, ja. Eine merkwürdig zwanghafte Tat, ne? Der hätte ja mal eine Antenne nehmen können zwischendurch oder so, aber nur Rückspiegel. Der muss irgendwie ein bisschen einseitig veranlagt sein. Shit happens. Ja. I'm sorry.
No problem.
Neighbor talk.
Hm? Kein Problem.
Ja, yeah, if you wonder, I could develop a little about question.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I said inspiration comes from frustration. What does it mean? It has to do with questioning. And most part of my educational work is to show people, also by example, giving examples, how to put things into question. How to put oneself in a position of surprise. Yeah, to wonder, why is this and how is this? And not so easy. Astonishingly. People, they live their life and say, oh, I've seen this and this, and no questions. So to question things is not so easy. And how do we question things? By going into the deep of sense experiences to try to see things in a different way, to look at pieces of art and wonder what happens there. And very important and mainly forgotten, how do I feel in front of a piece of art? How do I feel in a situation? What does it make with me in a bodily sense? And this questioning has to be brought to a point where we lose all our spontaneous answering. Yeah? In the beginning of research, we are easily in a position to give answers. When we go deeper, it's getting more complicated. And maybe it sounds astonishing, but I try to bring people into a state of not knowing anymore anything. Yeah, that's what Plato has called aporia. Aporia means not knowing forth and backward, just being. And this is a very, very important state of mind, which I think is necessary for the process of inspiration. Because only when we do not know any more further, our mental activity can make this this jump, this sudden change in viewing things, which is worth being regarded at, and we usually experiences with an ah. Uh-huh. Oh yeah. Yeah. So when there is no big question mark, there cannot be this aha. Uh-huh. Yeah. And what happens between this question mark, this state of mind where I am a question mark, not knowing any more further, this is We do not really understand. There is not one line, one way towards inspiration. We give creative processes a chance when we bring ourselves in a position of not knowing anymore. And to get into to this state of mind of an aporia, and to have the Plato calls anamnesis, recollection in a way that, oh yeah, it feels, and we know, oh, it was inside of me, but I didn't discover it. Yeah, and this is a psychological process. Yeah.
Aporia, you write this way. Mm-hmm.
A Greek You know Greek? I even don't know Apu. About like this. Maybe also like this, I don't know exactly. And the other one is anamnesis.
This is Zophon.
Sigma, yeah.
It's like this. This I have heard already. This is this?
Yes. Right.
I will look for it. I will look some more about it.
Yeah, this you will find aporia. I think it's you find it also in English dictionaries. Aporia. Anamnesis, this is a special Greek word. It comes from mneme, which is memory in Greek, and anamnesis is mneme is memory, and anamnesis is recollection or remembrance, a process of memorizing.
Bring it back.
Yeah. Bring it back. It comes out of me. For Plato, our souls before our birth were in the universe and knew everything. And then we came to birth, and there's so many things that distract us. So we have to look into ourselves. Where is it? What I already know. I just do not know that I know it. And by questioning, I first have to put away all I seem to know. Students come to me and say, I want to make examination on internet. I say, oh, internet. Yeah, I'm an expert. Yeah? Every day I sit 6 hours in front of an internet terminal. I'm an expert. They do not know anything. Yeah, they think they know, because they can make blah blah on what happens in the internet. But to question means what is happening with our awareness, images, texts, sounds, yeah. How do we relate to it? What do psychologists tell us about it? How does narrative function? Difficult questions. And in this media mix, even more difficult questions. So I try to bring them there. But it's not only this awkward and not always nice process. You know this writer's block phenomenon. Yeah, people come to me, oh, I write on my thesis, I have a writer's block. I usually react saying, that's very good, very close to the goal, but it doesn't feel very, very nice to have a writer's block. You know what I mean with writer's block?
Not
just a feeling, oh, my creativity is at an end, I just do not know how to go on. Yeah. And it's we have to be friendly to these points. Every artist comes to the point. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's important. But also, what can be very helpful in a more friendly way, to open our doors of perception, making excursions, experiment with viewing, yeah, to view things beyond trees and streets and cars, to enforce sense experiences, yeah. For example, right away I'm giving a lesson, a seminar on silence. And we start each session with being silent for a couple of minutes. For civilized person is very, or most of the time, it's awkward to be silent. People meet in elevators, and but there are cultures of silence. Yeah, some Eskimo cultures, when they meet, they do not talk a word. It's unpolite to talk. Just meet, sit together, go. And we are not anymore very much used to be silent. Only in very private moments where his beloved person or so can be silent. But it's a very valuable force of perception. Many things are going on when we are not talking, when we are not communicating with words. Many things are going on. And I try to bring students to find a language, to find thoughts about what is happening when we are not communicating with words, for example. This I mean by opening our sense to it.
Thanks. So thank you very much. It was really great to listen to you.
I hope that there are at least two or three sentences that are useful for you.
No,
I was not really prepared for that. But maybe, please cut what is just noise which
that's
words.
My work. I'm feeling, I'm listening to sort of people. Tomorrow, no, on Monday I will be with Peter Weibel.
Really? Greetings.
What?
Greetings.
Greetings, okay. Yeah, I have greetings from everybody to everybody.
Yeah. Good, so it's also very good for you. Make knowledge with many interesting people.
Mm? And also, between 8 and 40, maybe I will meet Maurice Benayoun and Marie Duque in Paris. You know them?
Once again, you're going to Paris?
Yeah. And I'm trying to find them also.
Yeah.
I wrote to them at the time I wrote to you, but Maurice answered, please ask me closer to that date.
Yeah.
I should write now. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But this is, I choose people. The places I'm visiting is places where I have friends is to get cheaper the travels, but also here it's more. I feel that in this field it's not like in Brazil. We have everywhere we go, we have somebody studying media, archaeology, media theory, media. It's very so. It was possible to connect the places where I had friends with places with interesting
That's
people
great.
To make interviews.
That's great. That's great. So you have experience with traveling in Europe?
It was my first time here.
The first time?
I arrived in March in Austria.
I see.
And now it's the first time I'm walking around. Because
you have a very German name.
Yeah, that's... I think I'm 50 generational. It's a long descendants, not so close.
I see. Yeah, people came from Germany also to Brazil.
Yeah, that's
many people.